This is the last day of the year, as we know, and on this day, people tend to think about what happened in the year that's concluding, and also look forward to the year to come. That just comes naturally to us, it's in the culture. Maybe there are even parties and different end of the year traditions. But the church, at least in the official prayer of the church, the liturgy, there's not much attention at all paid to the end of the year. There is in the Roman Missal, there's a votive mass or an option to a mass for blessings on the beginning of the new year, but we're not allowed to use that mass today or tomorrow, because today we're celebrating the octave of Christus, and tomorrow is the solemnity of Mary, the Mother of God, and so you can't use other optional masses on these days. It just shows that to the church, the change of the calendar year is not very significant. In the liturgy, we are continuing to reflect on the arrival of the Messiah, the birth of the Messiah, the birth of the Word made flesh. Today we shift from the Gospel of Luke, where we were reading for the past couple of days about the presentation. And at the end of yesterday's Gospel, it said that he went home. I went back to Nazareth. Right, he went home to Nazareth, and then he grew and became strong, filled with wisdom, and the favor of God was upon him. It was like a conclusion of the story of Jesus' childhood. So there isn't any more to say. Now there's still the passage about the Magi. That's also from Jesus' childhood, but we save that story for Epiphany, which we will celebrate on Sunday, Epiphany. But there aren't any more stories about Jesus' childhood. So the liturgy instead turns to the Gospel of John. And so today I just read the beginning of the Gospel of John, the same reading that we heard on Christmas Day, the prologue of the Gospel of John, which starts out in the beginning. So it takes us back to the beginning, to the pre-existent Word. Meaning, that's a theological term. Pre-existence, meaning he existed before he was born. That's why they call it pre-existent. In the first reading, we're also reading from one of the writings of John, not his gospel, but his first letter. And this reading starts out, children, it is the last hour. So even though the church does not pay any attention to the end of the year, the beginning of the new year, the readings do mention a beginning and an end, or a last hour and a beginning. I don't know if that's just coincidental or if the church is kind of humorously playing with the idea of beginnings and endings. I don't know. But let's reflect a little bit on this passage from the first letter of John. John is reflecting on the contrast between Christ and the Antichrist, or what he calls the Antichrists. There are many of them. Many antichrists, those who stand against Christ. The contrast between the Word and the anti-Word, anyone who stands against the Word, or the contrast between truth and the lie. At the end of this passage, he says, I write to you not because you do not know the truth, but because you do, and every lie is alien to the truth. So he's reflecting on these contrasts between Christ, Antichrist, truth, and lie. Let's pause a little bit to reflect on truth, because this has become a little difficult in modern times. It started in the 19th century, but it really became popular in the 20th century, the idea that there is no such thing as truth, as absolute truth. The position known as relativism. So you have your truth, I have my truth, but there's no absolute standard. That became a very popular way of thinking, and it's still popular now in the 21st century. It's a convenient way of avoiding having to submit to something absolute. And a lot of people will talk like this, but if you press them a little bit, they sometimes give in. They say, well, not everything is relative. For example, if you're in a conversation about truth, and the person says to you, well, there is no such thing as absolute truth, everything is relative, all you have to do is say, well, do you have a phone? And of course you'll have a phone, because everyone has a phone. Let me see your phone. And you say, do you have a phone or don't you? And they'll say, well, that's not an issue. I mean, of course I have a phone, I have it right here. But then if you say, that's my phone, then he will oppose you. If you say, that's my phone, he'll say, no, it isn't. It's my phone. I bought this phone, paid $10,000 for it, I got a receipt, got my name, SIM cards in my name, my GCash account is on everything. It's on my phone. He will defend the truth. And if you say, no, that's your truth, you can't impose your truth on me, that's my phone, you won't get anywhere. And he'll say, wait a minute, that's not the same thing. And so when it comes to questions of truth, almost everyone will say, well, there are certain things that are true. Established facts, scientifically verifiable facts are true. So you can measure certain things and determine, you know, is this 100 centimeters or is it 90 centimeters? And if it's not, well, then you can dispute it. That's why people will dispute. If you buy if you buy 5 kilos of rice and the person sells you 4 kilos, you can say, wait a minute, that's not 5 kilos. It's not true. It's not a true weight. Isn't this the controversy that's raging in the Philippines about the corruption? Did you really spend $100 million on this project or not? Where did the money go? It either went to the project or it went into the pocket of some contractor or some government official. What's the truth? Isn't that the controversy? There's really truth. Now, finding out what it is difficult. Because one person will testify, this is absolutely the truth, but here's my documentation. Another one will stand up and say, no, that person's lying, and those are false documents. Then it's hard to determine. But there is such a thing as truth, right? And nobody will say, oh, there's no such thing. It's all relative. Where that $100 million went, it's all relative. Nobody says that. They say it either went to the project or it didn't. There is some. It's either true or it's not. Okay, so this idea of relativism is being shrunk down. No, you can no longer say everything is relative, because there are some things that are not, including the possession of your phone or the question about where the money went. But people will still say, but there's no absolute truth when it comes to moral life, when it comes to religion. What you believe about God is your truth, and what I believe about God is my truth. What's required of you, well, that's up to you. What's required of me is up to me. What you believe about sexual morality or about marriage, well, that's all relative. Of course, as Christians, we realize, no, you can't leave everything relative. Some things are relative, sure. Some things are relative. Like whether that's a beautiful dress or not. Well, there's no absolute measure of that. But some things are not relative. There are such things as truth. And that's what John says. You know the truth. Every lie is alien to the truth. There's a clear distinction between truth and lie, between Christ and Antichrist. And we have to know that there's a distinction and choose the truth. One thing I love about hearing confessions, it's not always nice to hear confessions because you hear a lot of ugly things. But people tell the truth when they come to confession. They tell the truth. And that's really refreshing. Very straight. Father, I'm sorry I did this. I really lost my temper. I really stole that. I lied about this. I really did this bad thing. I'm telling you the truth. I'm sorry that I did it. May the Lord have mercy on me. It's very refreshing to have something so clearly stated. And almost everybody in the confessional just says the truth, because how can you be set free from sin if you're not acknowledging the truth? The victory over sin comes with truth. Okay, truth, Christ. Well, this is mentioned, and the reason why I'm talking about truth so much is because it also comes up in the prologue of John's Gospel. Yes, he talks about light, he talks about life, but he also talks about truth. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us, and we saw his glory, the glory as of the Father's only begotten Son, full of grace and truth. So it makes the connection between this Word, the eternal Word, who is now flesh, who has become flesh, who dwells among us, Jesus Christ. He's full of grace and truth. He's not relativity. He's not, it doesn't matter what you believe. He's a kind of absolute dividing line. He either is the eternal Word made flesh or he's not. He's either God or he's not. And there isn't any way to have both. You can't say it doesn't matter. It matters. Today's saint, Saint Sylvester, the Pope, was the Pope during the first council, the Council of Nicaea, which dealt with this topic, whether Jesus was really God or not. And of course they determined he is God. He's God. He's God from God. He's the Son of the Father. So this is an absolute, absolute. It's not a relative thing. Which means religion is not simply a matter of personal opinion. Religion is a matter of truth. And either Jesus is God or he's not. He's either the Savior of the world or he's not. You can't say, well, he's your Savior, but he's not my Savior. That doesn't make any sense. This is what John says in the prologue. From his fullness, we have all received grace in place of grace, because while the law was given through Moses, grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. Grace and truth, not grace and opinion, grace and relativity, grace and whatever you want. No, truth. No one has ever seen God. The only begotten Son, God, who is at the Father's side, has revealed him. Jesus is the revelation of God. This is what we celebrate on Epiphany, which we'll come to on Sunday. The revelation of God, the epiphany of God, the manifestation of God. God, who is invisible, makes himself visible so that we can know him, and we can love him, we can follow him. It's a very clear distinction between whether he is God or not. So that's where this takes us. He is God. He's always been God. He came into the world at a certain time. He was born in a certain moment. That's what we celebrate this octave of Christmas. And because he has come among us, we can know the truth. Our joy is to know, to accept, to follow the truth, Jesus Christ. He is the way, the truth, and the life.